there, and welcome back to the Cory Doctorow podcast. I'm so sorry it's been so long. I was traveling, and I'm about to travel some more, but I have a day at home because my family are overseas visiting my in-laws, and so I'm sitting at my office on a weekend and recording a quick podcast for you. So I have some upcoming trips, as I mentioned. If you're on the West Coast, you can see me at the grand reopening of the public domain at the Internet Archive in San Francisco on Friday, January the 25th. That will be the day that, for the first time since 1978, new materials enter the public domain in America. I'm speaking at the San Diego State University Writers Conference on Friday, February the 1st. And then in March, I'm going to be touring my next book, Radicalized, which is four novellas. You'll have heard some of that on this podcast before. I'm going to be at the Strand in New York on the 20th of March and at Berkeley Arts and Letters on the 25th of March, Fort Washington, BC on the 26th of March, and in Seattle on the 28th. I'll be in Halifax on April 24th and Toronto on April 29th. You can catch all that on the upcoming appearances page on my website. So I'm going to read two quick things to you today. The first is a little short story called Solon Despotic Dominion that I wrote for the, I think it's the 50th anniversary of Reason magazine. Can that be right? I think that's right. And it takes the form of a quick dialogue between a tech support person and a customer, and it's all in chat. Soul and Despotic Dominion by Cory Doctorow. Thank you for contacting Disher Technical Support. My name is May, and I am pleased to help you with your Disher experience. Are you human? That's a rather personal question. Let me talk to a human. I'd be happy to help you make your Disher experience the very best one possible. Human. One moment, please. Have a great day. Thank you for contacting Disher Technical Support. My name is May, and I am pleased to help you with your Disher experience. Are you human? Yes, sir. I am a live human operator. I am based in Charlestown, Nevis, at Disher's own in-house support center. How may I help you? My dishwasher won't wash my dishes. Sir, are you using Disher-approved products from the kitchen store? Yes. Sir, I show that you have purchased a family starter set of Burberry Gentility dishes with the optional entertaining expansion pack and a cocktail party upgrade from the Disher Dubai store in June 2024. Are these the dishes you are using in your Disher speckless? Yes. I left my parents' wedding china in storage because my last dishwasher wouldn't wash them. Sir, yes, that is correct. To ensure food safety and the proper delivery of your Disher experience, your speckless will not switch on if it detects unknown objects. Only authorized Disher Kitchen Store products are certified for use with your Disher speckless. I am using Disher dishes, the ones I bought in Dubai. Sir, yes, thank you. Please stand by while I investigate your account. Thank you for standing by. We at Disher value your trust and strive to earn it every day. If you have any comments, concerns, or compliments about your Disher experience, please let us know. Sir, thank you. I am back. I see from your IP address and other telemetry that you are in Melstone, Montana. Is that correct? Yes, I took a new job and got relocated here. Sir, thank you. I see your problem. Your dishes were sold for use within the Shia territories in the Middle East and Asian regions. They are not authorized for use in the USA. What? Are you crazy? They're Disher dishes. This is a Disher dishwasher. Sir, I am sorry you are unhappy. However, I must correct you. Please allow me to offer this frequently asked question. Q. Are products bought in foreign kitchen stores usable with my Disher speckless? A. No. The trademarks and other intellectual property in the products sold by different Disher-affiliated companies throughout the regional kitchen stores are licensed for use on a territory-by-territory basis. In many cases, different territorial licensors own the exclusive right to manufacture and distribute different brands in the kitchen store, and part of Disher's commitment to respecting international laws and intellectual property is our use of the sensors in Disher speckless systems to optimize your Disher experience by ensuring that our devices do not violate these important contractual arrangements. You're joking. Sir, I'm afraid it's not a joke. Please allow me to offer this frequently asked question. Q. May I bring my Disher products from one territory to another? A. No. Because trademarks and kitchen store products are licensed on a territory-by-territory basis, you may not export them beyond their licensed territories. Taking kitchen store products across national borders may create criminal and civil liability for you under global anti-counterfeiting treaties and national laws. Disher takes no responsibility for any legal problems you may incur as a consequence of exporting products from the kitchen store. At Disher, we have zero tolerance for counterfeiting. Wait, what? Counterfeits? I bought these in a Disher store. They're licensed product from your own store. Sir, I'm very sorry, but Disher Dubai and Disher USA are separate firms with their own licensing agreements with Disher Worldwide. You should not have brought these products across an international border. Had they been detected at the customs checkpoint, you could have faced severe penalties. What was I supposed to do? Sell them before leaving Dubai and buy another set in Montana? Sir, your license agreement is non-transferable. Sale or other transfer of your Disher kitchen store purchases will result in their use and all Disher products being terminated. If you leave a territory, we recommend contacting an appropriate recycling center for safe disposal of your kitchen store purchases. Look, May, I took this job in Montana. I work in shale gas and the company is providing my housing. I'm in the ass end of nowhere here. Even if I could buy a new dishwasher without this crap in it, they wouldn't let me install it. I just spent everything relocating halfway around the world and now you're telling me to throw away my dishes and buy another set? Sir, may I refer you to a frequently asked question? Q. Why should I use kitchen store products in my Disher speckless? A. Your Disher speckless is designed to provide the finest food hygiene experience in human history. Foodborne illnesses have killed more people than all wars combined. By controlling the cleaning experience from beginning to end, your Disher speckless can guarantee that everything you wash will come out sparkling clean, free from harmful pathogens, without pre-rinsing or harsh chemical agents. Your Disher speckless is water smart, hygienic, and safe. And the only way we can make that guarantee is by eliminating badly designed and substandard dishes, cups, and cutlery from the mix. We think it's a small price to pay, and we know you'll agree. Oh, come on.
Sir, is there anything else I can help you with today? Sir, are you there? Sir, may I refer you to a frequently asked question?
Q. Should I modify my Disher speckless to accept unauthorized products? A. No. This not only voids your warranty and risks your health, it is also illegal. Section 1201 of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act prohibits tampering with or removing effective means of access controls for intellectual property and provides for a $500,000 fine and or 5 years in prison for a first offense. Disher values intellectual property law and takes necessary steps to protect its own intellectual property. If tampering is detected, your Disher speckless will automatically notify Disher and local law enforcement. If your Disher speckless needs service, please contact Disher for a referral to an authorized service depot.
That sounded like a threat, May. Sir, is there anything else I can help you with today? Sir, are you still there? Sir, I hope you will take a moment to complete a short customer satisfaction survey. Sir, thank you for being part of the Disher family.
So that story is called Soul and Despotic Dominion, and it appears in the 50th anniversary issue of Reason magazine. Next, I'm going to read you my latest Locus column, which is called What the Internet is For. I think it makes a nice companion piece. The internet operates on a revolutionary principle, underpinned by a revolutionary principle, overlaid by a revolutionary principle. Is it therefore revolutionary? The revolutionary principle the internet runs on is this, the end-to-end principle, which states that any person using the internet can communicate with any other person on the internet without getting any third party's permission. If you want to connect to my web server, you simply connect to it. You don't need to pay a long-distance charge or ask your ISP to turn on the web feature. When someone invents another way of communicating like Skype or BitTorrent or the interplanetary file system, which is a real thing that you should really go look up, you can start using that right away to talk to anyone else who's using it. No permission from the phone company required. This is revolutionary. It replaces the principle of circuit switching, in which all connections need to be mediated through a central authority, AT&T, and only one kind of communications, voice, was permissible. Other features in the system, like the ability to send faxes, or plug in a modem, or connect an answering machine, or even to use a device called the Hush-a-phone, a plastic cup that fit over the phone's receiver, were licensed by AT&T for a fee. You may recall that at one time, the feature of caller ID cost extra.
This would be like your email provider charging extra to see who the message was from before you opened it. The revolutionary principle of end-to-end changed telecoms forever. It let people build new, undreamt-of services atop the phone network, and then services atop those services, until the phone network itself was outgrown by the internet, replaced with fiber cables that merely carry the odd phone call, which is a relic of the past, bobbing along in a raging torrent of data. Computers operate on a revolutionary principle. The Universal Turing Machine describes the underlying theoretical architecture of every computer you use today, and it describes a system for building a computer that can compute anything. Any program that can be expressed in symbolic logic can be executed on any computer. Modern computers may run the program in an eye blink, and older computers may labor over centuries over the same code, but given enough time, all computers can run all programs. This is revolutionary. It replaces the bygone practice of building special-purpose calculating engines that were engineered and built to solve a single kind of problem: actuarial tables, ballistic tables, census computation. The revolutionary principle of universal computing changed the destiny of humanity. The fact that we use the same computers to power every kind of application, from medical implants to cars to phones to voting machines, means that any improvement made to computers for any application improves computers for every other application. When you wonder at how quickly and far computers have come in our lifetimes, this is the fact to keep in mind. No matter what your field of endeavor, you benefit from improvements in computing, and thus there is no end to the energy and resources available for making computers better and better and better. Modern encryption is a revolutionary principle. While humanity has made ciphers to keep its messages secret since the time of the Caesars, the application of universal computers to cryptography, combined with fundamental breakthroughs in mathematics, has produced a family of reliable scrambling systems that work so well that even modestly powerful computers can, in an eye blink, encrypt a file so thoroughly that all the computers built and all the computers that ever will be built will never be able to guess the key needed to descramble it. Universal computers can run every program, including the ones that do the unbreakable scrambling and descrambling. Universal networks can carry any message from anyone to anyone, including the scrambled messages that can never be unscrambled without permission. This is revolutionary. Is the internet revolutionary? Nope. It is a necessary but insufficient factor for effecting revolution. States are powerful. States have police, armies, massive budgets, the power to compel cooperation from telecoms providers and tech companies, and the power to break down your door and seize your devices, or sneak in while you're out at work and attach keyloggers to them. They have unblinking eyes, thanks to the ability to rotate shift after shift after shift into the surveillance monitoring stations. They can watch perfectly, waiting for their adversaries to make a single slip. The best encryption, the fastest computers, the most open networks will not make you comfortable living in an autocratic, corrupt state. You and your radical friends will eventually make a mistake and all be rolled up by state thugs, or blacklisted, or blackmailed, or publicly discredited. The same computers, networks, and encryption that you use to defend yourself from the state also defends it from you, allowing it to keep secrets you can't brute force, to coordinate its agents at the speed of light, to surveil you from 1,000 networks. To evade this all-pervading power, you have to be perfect. To defeat your evasion, the state merely needs to find a moment's imperfection in your operational security. Security favors attackers. An earth-moving machine can build a wall or knock it down. The wall builders need to build a perfect wall. The wall destroyers need to only find one place of weakness. Give the same tools to attackers and defenders, and the attackers will win given enough time. The internet is not revolutionary. If you live in a repressive, corrupt state where the reins of power are in the hands of ruthless, greedy elites, the mere use of the internet is insufficient to keep you safe from oppression and retaliation. Even if you escape and go into exile, the internet will not keep your family and friends safe as you communicate with them. You cannot use the internet to obviate the need to effect political change. But the internet can be used by revolutionaries. There is no substitute for living in a democratic, legitimate, responsive state that uses best evidence and honest debate to arrive at policy, where officials are accountable and the rule of law is intact. The internet, a universal network with universal computing endpoints that can send and receive secure messages, is a tool that can crack open a space in even the most totalitarian of regimes, a place where reformers and revolutionaries can organize, mobilize, and fight back. It's a forum for whispering dissidents in secret and for blasting the shameful secrets of the powerful at full volume. The theory of change that goes, we will walk away from politics and use the internet to evade state oppression, is a dead letter, and it always has been. But the theory that goes, the internet will let us organize, to hold the government to account, to topple the corrupt, to rally the honorable and expose the wicked, that theory has never been more important. The internet is not a revolutionary technology, but it makes revolution more possible than ever before. That's why it's so important to defend it, to keep it free and fair and open. A corrupted, surveillant, controlled internet is a place where our lives are torn open by the powerful, logged, and distorted. A free, fair, and open internet is how we fight back. All right, that's this week's podcast. And after that essay, I'll remind you that the Electronic Frontier Foundation is a member-supported nonprofit. You can donate at eff.org/donate. I also want to note that while I read that essay, I discovered that Tim May, one of the founders of the cypherpunk movement, and one of the reasons that we have working cryptography today, died this week. Rest in peace, Tim. I'll be back with you, I hope, one more time before Christmas, but if I'm not, and even if I am, I hope you and your family have a brilliant holiday season, and I hope that 2019 finds you well, free, open, and fighting for a better world. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Cory Doctorow Podcast, licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike US 3.0. Or as Woody Guthrie put it in another context, this song is copyrighted in the US under Seal of Copyright 154085 for a period of 28 years, and anyone caught singing it without our permission will be a mighty good friend of ourn, because we don't give a dern. Publish it, write it, sing it, swing to it, yodel it, we wrote it, that's all we wanted to do. Many thanks to John Taylor Williams for mastering. That's Ryneck Studio, Ryneck Studio @gmail.com. John Taylor Williams is a full-time self-employed audio engineer, producer, composer, and sound designer. In his free time, he makes beer, jewelry, odd musical instruments, and furniture. He likes to meditate, to read, and to cook. Talk to you next week.